Okay, good evening, everyone. So last week we discussed the Isser, first of all, the prohibition against Havaras Nachla of a person completely transferring his Yerusha entirely away from the Yarshim or entirely away from a specific Yoresh and cutting them out either one Yoresh or all Yarshim, cutting them out entirely. We said that that's an Isser to do. But we mentioned that according to many, many poskim, if they're not entirely cut out, but they get at least a portion of the Yerusha, then there is no Isser. What that portion, what that amount is, so we mentioned the Shita of the Tashbetz, the Balaita, the Tashbetz says that it's a shear of Dalet Zuzi for Zuzim, which we said is interpreted in different manners in today's terms, in today's currency, in today's business. And we mentioned that some poskim look at it as a percentage of the person's Yerusha. We mentioned for Moshe Feinstein in one shuva, he says, as long as the person makes sure that 20% of his inheritance goes to the Torah Yarshim, then he's free to do other things with the other 80%. Another tshuva, Ramosh himself mentions an idea of back in the mid 60s, mentions $1,000. If each Yorish gets $1,000, then he could do what he wants with the rest of the money. And we said that there are a number of different opinions. There's nothing that's absolutely set in stone as to what the amount is, but there are different opinions. But then we started at the end, and this is what I want to pick up with. We started discussing the propriety of doing that, whether it's appropriate to do that or not. To be Mava the Yerusha.
I have a question. We said that it was a sure for the father, for example, to exclude one of the kids from the inheritance. If he gives all his money while he's alive, does that prohibition count?
Okay, so that's a good question. Let's say a person, he doesn't want a certain child to be Yorish, for example, so he simply gifts all his money when he's alive to a different child. So there's a discussion about that in the poskin. If he's doing it specifically for that purpose, then it seems it's still wrong to do. It might be, yes, it might be part of the Isser. If a person simply gives away his money, well, certainly if he spends his money or gives it away while he's alive without the intention of specifically disinheriting anybody, but he wants to take care of it. He says, my hard-earned money, I want to do as I please with it while I'm alive, and I like this person very much. I want to give him a major gift. I don't think I don't anticipate needing the money at this point, that part of the money. So that is okay to do, but if his kavana is specifically to disinherit, then it's not so okay.
If you have a situation, let's say you have two kids. One kid is extremely wealthy. He doesn't need your Yerusha. So you want to give everything to the other kid.
Okay, so to give everything, to do that in a way that forcing his hand that everything's going would not be the right thing to do. As you said, if you leave a significant amount even to the one as well to the one as wealthy, significant amount, which I said is a matter of interpretation what that is. But if you do that and give the bulk of it, the much, much more than 50% to the other child, that would be okay. Plus, we'll see other considerations. But as I think what we ended with last time was that there's no shaila in the world that a person is allowed to express his ratzon to his children or to whoever his heirs are about what he would like them to do with the money. Now, that doesn't mean they're bound by it necessarily, but it's certainly okay for a father to tell his sons, for example, he says, I'm not writing a will, even a halachic will, I'm not going to do anything, not going to take advantage of any halachic avenues of diverting the money away from my sons, but I'm asking my sons to please share the money with my daughters, with their sisters, either equally or whatever he tells them. It's perfectly okay to do that, to make that request, because you're not being mavi the Yerusha, you're simply telling your son, you're telling your Yorish, this is what I would like you to do. Now, as I said, he doesn't know. There's no guarantee that he'll do that. So, but I mentioned at the end of the shiur last week, for a person to just rely on that, saying that he has, for example, one son and three daughters, and he really feels, yes, of course, my daughters should inherit as well, and they were very good to me, and maybe they took care of him more than his son, perhaps towards the end of his life. Very much want them to have a significant part, maybe even equal portion of the Yerusha, but to simply allow it all to go to the son and rely on his goodwill that he'll share it with his sisters is not a recommended thing to do in the vast majority of cases, because as much as he may trust his son and feel that his son would respect his wishes and would be quote unquote fair to the girls, it's not necessarily the case. And unless the person is absolutely certain that that's going to happen, it's not advisable to rely on that, but rather to take advantage of some of the methods that we'll talk about of how he could see to it that it goes to them. So I just want to share with you in the Sefer Emes LeYaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's psakim, and there is a tshuva here where he writes. Shiloh that was asked to him. Shiloh that was asked him. Where a man died, and he left over one son and two daughters, and he wrote a will. Apparently, it sounds like it was not a halachic will, and in which he divided everything equally. Now we're going to talk soon about non-halachic wills. But Rav Yaakov is quoted here as saying that the non-halachic will doesn't have any teeth to it. And, we'll see about the kind of, I don't want to get into all the halakha comments, I want to explain it first, but the bottom line is that he says it would be proper, even if the din, as he writes here, even al pi din, the son is allowed to keep everything, despite any other considerations, which we'll talk about, but he says, still, rak mishum hidur yasek viat sava. He recommends, his avad, the best thing to do, the proper thing to do, mishum hidur, would be to follow the tzava. But he's not bound by it. Okay, so let's get into some of the specifics. So first of all, I just wanted to say it like this. Every state has laws, right? If a man dies and he doesn't write a will, what happens to his money? In some states, all the money goes to the wife if he left over a wife. In some states, the wife gets 50% and the children get divide equally the other 50%, meaning boys and girls. Different states have different laws. So let's say a person, Taka, passes away and he does nothing. He does nothing and then by law, his daughters end up, let's say even he dies, he's already widowed. He dies as a widow, so there's no wife in the picture, but he has boys and girls, and the state law is they divide it equally. So the question is, what is the status of that money that's in the hands of the girls now? So the poskim say that al-pitin, they're not allowed to keep it, not allowed to keep the money, because al-pitora, the son was yoresh, and the fact that there's a state law, or even a din of the malchus that goes to the daughter, doesn't allow them to ignore the halacha, doesn't allow them to keep the money. There are different levels of severity that are attributed to this. If she would keep it, is it outright gezel or is it something less than that? But the consensus is she's not allowed to keep the money. However, there is a major shaila, a major discussion in halacha: is she obligated simply just to give it all over to her brother, lock, stock, and barrel? Meaning she's got to do something legally for the boy to get it. The son to get it, she has to release it legally. Otherwise, if she doesn't release it, then the money's going to go to her, and she has to, sign it over to him, or waive her rights, or give it to him. So there's a major discussion. Halacha: is she allowed to? Is she entitled to, or allowed to charge a fee for that? Charge a fee that I've got your money. Your money has been given to me. The state is giving me 50% of the Yerusha, which belongs to my brother. So am I allowed to at least charge him something for the for releasing control, for being
mochlet? It's a ransom.
What do you call it? Ransom.
Ransom.
Ransom. Yeah. Well, it's not so posh in halacha. There are many poskim that say that she's entitled, since the money was given into her rishus, as much as she's obligated. If she would do nothing, he would never get it. Even if she says, I won't touch it, I won't do anything. But Lamaisa, he can't have access to it unless she actively goes and does something about it. So there are many, this shadow goes back a long time, and it seems to be the halacha Lamaisa that many poskim pass nowadays is she is entitled to a something for doing that. The amount that that's the recommended amount is 10%. That 10% of the whole Yerusha, 10% of the Yerusha, she would be entitled to keep, and the boy would end up getting 90%, which let's say if the state law, he got 50 and she got 50, so it would mean that she would have to relinquish another, you know, four-fifths or nine-tenths of her, you know, of her part.
For her part or for the total? So let's say that
she could end up with 10% of the total. So she's getting 50%, so she gives up whatever the
method. She got half a million, she has to be 400K.
Right, that's right. That's the recommended amount that the post can say that she'd be allowed to, quote unquote, charge for the schus of giving it up to her brother. This is where the man did nothing. Yeah, go ahead.
And if she does nothing, what's the status of that money?
So the Chassam Sofer says it's mamash gezel. She's a gazlan. She has no right to the money. It's a pitor, it's his. The state is giving it to her, but it's like, for whatever reason, the state would go over to Reuven and take his money away and give it to Shimon. You know, so Shimon can't just say, well, okay, look, it's a... despite the Inan Chusadina, that's what I'm saying.
Let me just take that a step further. So if she says, okay, I can't benefit from it, I give it to Yeshiva.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And in fact, there has been many times shilas. We'll try to get to it right now about a secular will. If a person writes a secular will, if that's binding, and there are many situations where people have done that and only written a secular will, nothing halachic, and money has been left to yeshivas and other institutions, and then the shilah comes up, are they allowed to keep it based on a secular will? So let's talk about that. But I just want to, before I do that, I just wanted to mention one or two points, and that is that. A number of posts can say, and I'll just quote two right now, the Shal Shuvas Maram Shik, who is a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, and the Iris Moshe, Moshe Feinstein, both say that in the event that a person has a son who is completely off the Derech HaTorah, he's Machal Shabbos, and he doesn't send his children to yeshiva, doesn't give his children a chinuch, etc. He's completely mumar, then it is permissible, al pi Torah, to disinherit him. Even though the Gemara says that a person shouldn't distinguish between a better son and a son who's not as good, or a person disinherit a child who's not kind to the father, who's not properly respectful to the father. Perhaps he's basically from Yishama Shabbos, and you know it's kosher and Shabbos, and says Kishiva. Unfortunately, he's lacking in his kibbut aveim. He's lacking, like many of us are lacking in various areas. So even if he's lacking exact in this area, kibbut aveim, which is the most sensitive area, where his father says, like, why in the world should I let him inherit when he has no respect for me and doesn't treat me properly? That's where the Gemara says afal pike, and a person is not supposed to, not allowed to disinherit him, totally disinherit him. But on the other hand, if the child is completely off the derech, then it is permissible to do that. One of the reasons is that the main reason he's not supposed to disinherit a son, even if he's not 100% of what he should be, is that maybe his children might be. The fact that he's not on the right derech now, but his children might be. Now, although that could happen even if the son is totally off the derech, and we know, Baruch Hashem, it has happened where people have gone completely off and their children or grandchildren came back, but it's less of an expectation. If he's not even being mechanich his children, the chinuch, the education, the upbringing they're getting is totally connected to the Torah, anti-Torah, then there's much less of an expectation that they will end up going in derech HaTorah, and therefore, as I said, the Maram Shikha, Rav Moshe, and others, paskin, that one is allowed to totally disinherit a child like that. But it has to be, as I said, a child who's completely off the derech, not one who's, not holding exactly where his parents would like him to be. Good.
Where's Matas Shikha?
One more thing I wanted to say is that the Svarim also talk very highly about, very much in favor of a person leaving a certain amount of money, a certain amount of his Yerusha to Tzedakah. And that's considered a very proper thing to do. And if a person does that, again, not totally, not by disinheriting anybody, not by not giving all his money to Tzedakah, and not by, as I said, cutting out any particular Yarish entirely, but not rather than letting all the money go to Yerusha, taking a chelik of it and distributing to Tzedakah either before he dies or even in the process of a halachic will, that is considered to be a proper thing to do. And it says, you know, a person there he's protecting his own neshama, or he's taking steps to for his future in the world to come, that he should have a better place there, that he should have protection from Rahman Salam, from Dinam, etc. So he's allowed to do that, and it's even encouraged to do that. There, if you look in the Shalah Kadosh and in the Chavetz Chaim and Avos Ches and other places, they speak highly about that that's an appropriate thing to do. But the question, of course, always is amount. What amount? What percentage? And that's something that can't be given over as a general formula, but rather something that first the person, or if it's a couple, you know, discuss amongst themselves and maybe consult with their rav or with others who may be able to give them advice as to what would be appropriate for their personal particular situation. But that's not considered wrong at all, to channel some of the money, some of what otherwise would have gone to Yerusha, to channel it to tzedakah.
The reason it's okay to totally disinherit someone who went totally off, because they are going to use the money for a wrong thing.
That's one of the reasons. Another reason it says because there's no expectation that his children will ever be better. And the reason why it says not to disinherit someone who's not acting such a proper lifestyle is because, okay, he's not, but hopefully his children will be. So we want them to have, you know, the Yerusha will eventually go to them. But when that's not expected, if he's totally off the derech, the halacha looks at it like it's slim chances that his kids will be good. So
if we went totally off, let's say they have no kids, so the Yerusha is not going to go down any further.
So who has no kids? He has a son, but his son.
The reason it's okay is why we say disinherit totally is because.
Because the money would eventually, because we're not expecting that the money is going to end up in good hands eventually.
Oh,
right. That's another reason is brought also, that even in a person's lifetime, even money that belongs to a person, if he loses something, the dinim of Hashavas Aveda and Hatzalas Mammon of a person who's a Rasha Gomer are not so posh. It's not so posh that you have to, in general, you can't steal from him, but that you have to go out of your way to protect his money. There are certain halachas where you don't. So he says, certainly I don't have to give him money. These are all reasons. Okay, so now, so the question is, a person wants to do the right thing. We mentioned last week that it's strongly advised. I mentioned the Yeshar Chaim and the Emes Liakov, and many others say it, that a person is strongly advised to make sure that his daughters do get a reasonable part of the Yerusha, if not an equal share, but at least a very reasonable share of the Yerusha. And certainly if a person leaves over a wife, there's no question that he's strongly urged and encouraged to take the proper steps that she should have, you know, whatever she needs for the rest of her lifetime. So the question is how to do it. What is the right way to do it? So let's just first discuss whether a secular will work. So in order to give money over to when a person is dying, he would have to see to it that there is a kinyan which is chal in advance. He can't be mocked to things once he's gone. He would have to make a kinyan that's going to be chal before he dies. Now, he doesn't just want to give away his money, you know, while he's alive and well, or even if he's not so well, but he's hoping he's not dying the next day. So he doesn't just want to give away everything he owns. He has to leave, you know, for himself. So the idea would be to make a kinyan which is chal shortly before he dies, or just a moment, you know, Shah Chas Kodem Misaso. The problem with doing that, one of the problems, is that a person can only do that on that which he owns now. If a person writes a shtar and he does it and he makes a kinyan and he's makna that everything should go to whoever it may be, let's say it should go to his, he wants to divide the money equally between his one son and one daughter, and he would be makna it at any given point, any money he earns or any assets that he acquires after that kinyan would not be included. You can't be makna something you don't own. You can make a kinyan now that shvichal shachas kodem misaso, but only what you own now. So, assuming he does it when he's whatever age, 60 years old, and then he lives for another 40, 50 years, or however long he lives afterwards, assuming that he gets more money and more assets, he would have to do it again and again and again. And it's like, you know, in the davar sof is
you can't use a percentage.
No, you can't even. That's right. And the only, because he could only, the kinyan could only have any chalos, any teeth on stuff that he owns now. So if he has 50% of what he owns, but if 50% to whatever, if 50% of what he owns is in excess of what he owns now, so then it's not going to work. Or even the 50% could only come from what he owns now, not from what he's going to gain, you know, going to earn later. So that's the chisaron with that way of doing it. Now, certainly if a person says, makes a statement and says, when I die, I want this one to inherit this, this one to inherit that, I want my son to inherit 50%, my daughter to inherit 50%. That is totally worthless. The only time the expression, I want so-and-so to inherit, works is, number one, for a person who's a shchiv meira. Shchiv meira means that he's at a point where he's basically karov lemisa. He's already weak enough that he can't walk on his own. He can't walk without other people helping him. He's close to the end of his life, and he's concerned. He's worried about that, you know, he doesn't know when his last day is going to be. So he wants to give away his property. So a shchiv meira, a person who's that close to misa, he is allowed just by verbal. By an oral statement without any kinyan, he is able to give away his property. However, if he uses a lashon yerusha, if he says so and so should inherit this and so and so should inherit that, it only works within his Torah yarshim. If he wants to redistribute, let's say he has three sons, just for the simplest sake, three sons, none of them are a bechor, because the first one was born by a C-section, so he has three sons, no bechor, and instead of getting 33, 33, 33, he wants one of them to get 60% and the other two to split, you know, 20-20. So there, if he would say, my son Reuven should inherit 60% of what I own now, and each of my other sons should inherit 20%, that would work, because he's a shchiv meira, and he's only doing it within the Torah Yarshim. But if he wants to give anything to a daughter, or anyone else, if he uses the lashon of Yoresh, it's invalid, because they can't be Yoresh. The only ones who could be Yoresh are his Yarshim. So even though he's changing the percentage, that he could do with the lashon Yerusha. If he wants to give away to a daughter, he would have to use a different language, not Yerusha, but just Matana. That he's, I hereby give to my son X and to my daughter X. So that would work, but only by a shchiv meira. Shchiv meira, again, is a person who's very close to death. He's already, you know, his kochos are waning, and he can't get about by himself. And most people don't want to wait for that to happen, because who knows, you know, what's going to be then. And he has to be of sound mind still, but sound mind and weak body. And so that's not the most practical thing in the world. I will tell you just parenthetically, I did... somebody once discussed with me a case. It was a very unfortunate case of a very young man with a wife and, you know, little, you know, very very small children, who unfortunately this man was very very ill, and he was coming. His days were numbered. It seemed al pi derech hatev, his days were numbered. He was dying of a terminal illness, and so had he died without doing anything, his money would all go to his kids, not to his wife, as we explained. Then, you know, based in probably would have to get involved in and make an apotropis to make sure that the money is handled properly, because the ketanim can't handle their money and make sure the wife is supported instead. But he wanted to, you know, make sure that his wife is taken care of course, and that his kids be taken care of. So to the idea of writing a Torah, a tzava at that point was too stressful, and they didn't want to, you know, talk to him about writing any wills. But he was instructed to simply make a statement. He was a shchiv meira, unfortunately. He was a shchiv meira, and just simply to make a statement of giving away, that he hereby gives all of his property to his wife. Now, someone discusses with me that I discussed it at the time with I don't want to quote names in case I don't say everything accurately, but with a very, very prominent dayan in New York. I discussed the matter with him. And the question was, is he obligated to make sure that though that he leaves something that goes directly to his children, or to his, he had at least one boy, he had two, three children, at least one was a boy, so is he obligated, his son is his yoresh, not his wife, so is he obligated to make sure that his son gets at least 20%, whatever dalet zuzi is? So he said no, in this case not, because the whole idea that he wants to give the money to his wife is that she should have the money she needs to raise the kids. It wasn't chas v'shalom a situation of any sort of broken family or anything. No, it was a perfectly, you know, routine family where the mother would, you know, was unfortunately losing her husband, but she wanted nothing more than to have the ability to raise her children and support her children. So he said here, where the intention of giving the money to the wife is so that the children should benefit from it, and it's the best way, instead of having apotropos, instead of letting the kids get the money and then Basin has to find an outside party, an apotropos, who's going to handle the affairs. The best person to handle the affairs for the kids would be the mother. So he said in that case he didn't have to leave anything. There would be no isser of avaras nachla. He said he could just make a statement as a shlimira that he hereby gives everything over to everything. Mat the shlimira also has to be everything. That's another tznai. Mat the shlimira. Shlimira can't give over some and leave some. There are a lot of but he was ready to do that. Just to he made a statement, gives everything over to his wife, and then and he needed to do nothing more.
So when the kids get of age, however you define that, does the wife then have to, or the mother, have to then give the money, whatever is left to the kids?
No, she doesn't have. Once he does that, the money is hers. The assessment was, the judgment was that she's going to use it to raise her kids. Probably that's what, you know, she was, that's what she wanted to do. So, but Lamaisa, the money is hers. No, the money is totally hers. The same way, if he would have made a statement giving his money away to a total stranger, it would have become that total stranger. That would have been the wrong thing to do, but it would have worked. It would have been valid if he would have said the guy get this. Assuming he was of sound mind still, but who knows? Whatever. So let's say a person. Let's say the marriage unfortunately is not a harmonious marriage, and maybe, and he doesn't care, you know, really crazy, these crazy situations where he doesn't care, and he says, I have a good friend, he's a good man, I don't trust my wife, I don't trust the world, I trust my friend, he'll take care of my family. He says, I hereby give over, he says, as a shrimera, I hereby give everything to Plony, everything. Then Plony would get everything, and he wouldn't, that would have been an isser, but it would have been valid.
Yeah. Could be if there was packed at millions of dollars also, meaning if this is just a, you know, at most in the 100,000 lower, you know, amounts, if it's too, you could leave that. But there are people, I would assume, if you have 50 million, they would probably, you know, not want to let his kids be Irish.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Such an amount, you know, if it's just, you know, regular, yeah, right, yeah, six, I think figures.
Right, I think we're talking about regular. I don't even know if it, I don't know if it was six figures or not. It was just the reg. It wasn't an.
Not paying their college anyway. Their
husband.
Tuition.
Okay.
All right.
Do we need a limbs to do that? You know, a witness?
Only if. Does he need a witness? Only if somebody would challenge it, but if the kids would challenge it, but they wouldn't even know to challenge it. So I don't think. But there were, I mean, the person. No, so technically speaking, no. The answer is no. As long as we know what happened. Okay. Now, getting back though, so that's not the most practical thing though for the average person, because the average person wants to set things in place before the stage of shchimira. So a secular will doesn't, according to many, many poskim, doesn't help, because it doesn't have the right, as I said, the secular will, you know, writes that he's being morish something to this child and that child, or to whoever he is, and we said they can't, after Misa, it's bottle, it doesn't do it. The Yerusha kicks in at death, and the secular will doesn't override that, according to many, many poskim.
What if it would be makneh to them after Misa or something?
No, you mark the Sha'achas code to Misa, so.
Yeah.
Right, well, yeah, it technically could, but then, as I said, that would only work on what he has at the time that he made the Kenyan. Right? It doesn't work on the stuff that he gets later. If waits for the last minute, maybe, but.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, yeah, well, he has a few options, but I'm talking about a person who wants to do it in advance. Yes.
So, in Miami-Dade County, you can register an owner for real estate, owner of something, and then there can be something called a remainder. After the person's nifter, the remainder now becomes gets the ownership. Where there's another model that there's a quick claim to you that transfers automatically. Is that shy to this, or is that?
I don't know. Maybe if they ask that, follow exactly what you said.
If there's a mechanism, yeah. In the
okay, but
that allows that automatically transfers from one to the other. Is that
right? So that probably wouldn't be better than any other secular will.
Okay.
So now, but. That having been said, there are gedolei haposkim that say that a secular will does work and has to be honored. Why is that? So the main mahalach, and you have in the tshuvas from Reb Chaim Ozer, who was the gadol hador, the Rav of Vilna, the gadol hador of his time, certainly the posek hador of his time. He writes that he says, I see that it's common that bati din do honor secular wills, and I was, you know, trying to understand why. So his explanation is there is a concept called mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. If a person before he dies, gives instructions of what he wants to be done with his money, so the Gemara says mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. There's a mitzvah, at least on his children, to follow his will. Now, So you say, well, if there is, so why doesn't that just change our whole discussion here? The reason it does, because we paskin that that's only if it's hushlush ayidei acher, only if he gave it to a shlesh. Shlesh means a third party. If he took the money and he gave it to someone, and he gave it to Reuven, he says, Reuven, when after I die, I want all this money to go to whatever, my son, my daughter, my friend, whatever it is. So then, if it's in the hands of another person, then there's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis, and that person is supposed to give it to whoever he said. But if a person just makes a statement, just makes, this is what I want to happen with my money when I die, and he doesn't give it over, give it into the hands of a third party who could carry out his wishes, then it's not binding. There is no mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. That's how we pass it. So says Reb Chaim Ozer, but if a person writes a secular will and he does it properly in a way that's legally binding based on, you know, the law of the land, that would equal the idea of giving it to a shlish, even though he didn't technically give it to a shlish, but he put in place the legal power and the legal force that would see to it that it's carried out. Because he says, what's the reason? Why is it that we say that only mitzvah kaim tiferet meis only applies if you put it in the hands of a shlish? Because otherwise we say we don't see full gemiras das. We don't see that the person was fully committed. If he just made that statement, but he didn't do anything about it, he knows that when he dies, you know, who says it's going to happen? If he gives it over to an individual who he trusts, he takes the key to a safe deposit box, not just the key, but he gives everything over. He gives full control, physical control of all his assets to somebody else who has the power to do anything now. So obviously he's serious, and he tells that person, this is what I want to happen. We see he's serious about it because he gave it over to someone else to carry out his wishes. So says Reb Chaim Ozer, writing a will is equal to doing that. Writing a will which is binding by the secular courts shows that he was serious about it. Now, Rav Yasha writes in a tshuva, well, maybe that's only by a secular person, a person who's not a shomer Torah mitzvahs. A firm person, especially went to the shiurim here, he knows that a secular, it's like a circular, he knows the secular will is not worth anything. So if it's not worth anything, so how does doing that show that he's serious? But maybe a person who doesn't know halacha, or who's not firm at all, and he thinks the secular will is going to work, and he does it, okay, then it should taka work. Then by writing a secular will, he has shown full gemiras das that this is what he wants to happen. But if he's a firm person, maybe not. But Lemaisa, this is the explanation that Reb Chaim Ozer says, and that, now he doesn't necessarily say he agrees to it, Reb Chaim Ozer, but this is how he explains what he calls the minog of the Bati Din in his time, and many other Achronim say the same thing, that by writing a secular law, that is sufficient gemiras das. Obviously, the person did it, he doesn't think he's wasting his time and wasting his money by paying a lawyer to draft the papers and everything. He must think that it's gonna work at the end of the day, no pun intended, that it's going to work. So Memela, that shows gemiras das, and Memela, then it does work. This is how many poskim rule. Now,
is that because they usually ask you to make a power of attorney? So the power of attorney person is considered like a shlish?
So Rav Padua, in his tshuva called Cheshiva Eifod, he writes in England, it's always done like that. He says, I think this is the minute that you have to set up another person who will be basically power of attorney. So he says, Memela, it's like shlish, it's equal to shlish. And then he says, oh, then I saw Rav Chaim Ozer, says a very similar thing, and I was very happy. Now, Rav Chaim Ozer doesn't say specifically that, but maybe that's, but that certainly makes it better. So do you absolutely need that? If you would have a system, a secular system, where that wasn't required, it sounds like it would work anyway. But certainly that makes it better, and that's exactly how the Cheshiva Eifod spells it out.
Is that the same thing as an executor, or is that
plain? Well, an executor would probably, that's what you're talking about, right? That's what Robert Rose is talking about.
I wasn't sure if that was a power of attorney.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I don't know myself in all the legal part of it, but Rav Chaim Ozer doesn't say power of attorney, and it doesn't say executor. He just says, as I told you. Okay, so now, if a person taka does that, he doesn't write a halachic will. He just writes a secular will, and then he passes on. In secular will, he gives money to this daughter and that daughter and whoever else. Now it becomes a big shaila. So, do we follow it? Don't we follow it? And so if everyone agrees to follow it, the real Yarsh, the Torah Yarshim, who are going to lose something because of it, because instead of giving it all to his son, he gave 50% to his son, 50% to his daughter. If the boy says, I'm happy, gesund to hate, I want it that way, then there's nothing to talk about. Then there's no argument, and then there's no shaila. Of course, they could uphold it. Shaila, let's say he doesn't. Let's say the boy says, I know halacha. The Torah says I get everything. She doesn't get anything. This is secular thing. It's not a Torah thing. I challenge it. And he takes his sister to Beis Din to take the money away from her. It would be a big shiloh. What's going to happen?
You're basically saying, if I do a secular will, I should have all my kids sign off on it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll suggest something else in a minute. I'm saying don't just write a secular will.
So,
no, but if you're doing.
So don't just write a secular will, because it's just opening up the possibility of Rachmana Litzlan, tremendous machlokas. And at the end of the day, Beis Din would probably make some sort of pshara where they wouldn't let the daughter keep all of the part that the will gave her, but they might do that. I don't know for sure. It depends anyway. If you went to a Beis Din, a Talmidim of Rav Chaim Ozer or Rav Moshe Feinstein, who also has a mahalach accepting secular wills, a little different, but he also says the secular will works. So if you went to people who follow Rav Moshe's psak, they would give everything to the, you know, to the people who the will leaves it to. If you went to other rabbanim who, you know, reject this, they may not. So it doesn't pay to do that, because it just leaves the possibility of machlokas and discord rather than peace and harmony. So this is where the Rabbi Yaakov says, if somebody did that, he says you can't force the son to listen. He also said, well, apparently he's not, but you can't force the son to listen. I'll keep it of the aim. He also doesn't have to do it, because he can keep it of the aim. You only have to do with your parents' money. You don't have to spend your own money if you keep it of the aim. And now it's your money. He says, technically it's your money. It's not your father's money. Your father passed away. It's your money. But he says, what I advise, Mishum Hidur, Avada, you should follow. Avada, he should follow. You're asking me what's the right thing, the best thing to do? Of course he should follow the will. But could you force him if he says he won't? Rav Yaakov writes here, you can't force him. So let me just tell you in a nutshell the advisable way to do it, and then maybe we'll see, because I don't want to leave you hanging without this. The most recommended way by the poskim, and this is what many, many people do nowadays, is to use a tool which is called the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. How it got his name right now is not important, but it's called the Shtar Chatzi Zachar, half of the male. And what it is the following. Let's say, just simplicity case, a person has one son and one daughter, and he wants it to be split 50-50. So, first step, he writes a secular will. Writes a will, which is binding according to the land of the law, writes exactly what he wants, 50 to him, 50, or if he wants to give to tzedakah, if he wants to give some here, some there, whatever he wants, being careful not to be careful. Just writes a secular will, whatever he wants, and has it drawn up and legally, ratified or whatever it takes, etc. Then he writes this other document called the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. And what does that document say? It's addressed to his son. In my case, simple case, just one son and one daughter. So one Yoresh is the son, right? He says, "Dear son, I understand that Pitara, everything is yours. But it's my rutzon that you follow the will. I left the will, and it says exactly what I want. It's my rutzon that you follow the will. You don't have to, but if you follow the will, great. If you don't, though, I just want you to know that I have taken upon myself a debt to my daughter, your dear sister, who you're trying to leave out. I've undertaken a debt to her. Now, the debt in the amount of, now here it has a blank, and you fill in a number which is clearly way above your entire your inheritance. Let's say a guy dies and leaves over, you're good with the numbers, 10 million is good enough for this?
Yeah.
Okay, he leaves over 10 million. So he writes, I have taken upon a debt to your sister in the amount of $25 million, payable one moment before my death. So my dear son, you yarshin everything. All 10 million is yours. The only thing is that you owe your sister 25 million. So after you finish paying off that debt to your sister, whatever's left is yours, which is zero, or minus zero. So, and he draws up this document. He makes a kinyan on this in his lifetime that he's undertaking a debt to his daughter in the amount of, again, let's just be more realistic. Let's say he's leaving over $2 million. So he's taking a debt to his daughter in the amount of $10 million, and payable one moment prior to death. And it says in there, we could talk a bit more details less. I could show you examples of it. You know, it says that he could retract. I could retract from this at any time if I want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's as long as I don't retract, this is payable one moment before my death, and it's from my Yerusha. So Memela, the son has no choice. If the son's going to say, no, I'm going to fight the secular will, and say, fine, I'm going to go with the Torah. Go with the fine, so you get everything. But you get everything, and now you owe, because that's the halacha. He has to pay up his father's debts from the money he yarshins. He's mechuyev to pay. It's not just a, you know, l'frim mishas adin. He has to pay off any debts from the money that his father left him. So he has to pay off this $10 million debt to his daughter, and then he's, you know, obviously that's $2 million. He only has to pay from the $2 million, but he loses every penny. And this, so it doesn't make any sense. But if he goes along with the will, then she gets one, and he gets $1 million, he gets $1 million, Shalom Yisrael. If he has more, let's say it's two boys and a girl, and let's say he's afraid one boy might go along, you know, with the will, one wouldn't. So he writes that the debt is payable only from the portion of a son who contests my will. And he writes that. And then let's say he has two daughters and he wants them each to get a chalik. So it could be you might have chas v'shalom, but you might have, let's say, one of the brother, he doesn't like one of his sisters. He can't stand her. So he'd rather owe all the money to his other sister. In other words, if you would just write in that document that I took upon a debt to your sister Chana, and payable upon my a moment before my death, and he likes his sister Chana, but he doesn't like his sister Leah. So the guy in the will, the guy wrote that Chana and Leah, Shlomi, Chana and Leah each get a third of his thing, but Shlomi doesn't like Leah at all. He likes Chana. So the thing says he owes Chana money. I'd rather do that. I'd rather inherit the money and give it all to Chana, and Leah lost everything. So or maybe he'll make a deal with Chana. Say, look, you know, I owe this thing says I owe you $10 million. I'm only yarshing two. How about, you know, I'll give you the two, and under the table you'll give me some of it back, and then Leah will have them. So to avoid that, he should name each one of the girls. Anyone who he's putting into his will, he should name in this document. I take upon a debt payable to Chana, Leah, and anyone else who he's listing in the will, he should put in this document. The debt is payable to all of them, the equal share, or whatever he wants to write in it. And if you don't, listen to the will, then you have to pay off the debt.
And
if you listen,
sons who may not be able to find,
say it,
including sons who may not be able to find.
Yes. And now, by doing this, he has done nothing wrong. Many say this is not even called Havaras Nachla. If he does this, even if he would end up in his will, you know, it's not recommended to use it for that, but even if his will, he would end up disinheriting somebody, it's not called Havaras Nachla, because it's not going through Nachla channels, in a sense. It's going through the goodwill of the Yarshim. But the point is, this is almost like a foolproof technique where he's done the advantage of this over the last thing I mentioned, it applies to everything. He doesn't have to worry about redoing it, you know, anytime he gets more money. It just says, a minute before I die, I owe your sister or your sisters, you know, as long as he puts in a number that he's sure is going to be big enough. If he thinks he may be worth more than $10 million before he dies, so write $25 million.
Why does he have to say more? Why doesn't he just say the amount they're supposed to get that he thinks in such a
Because write the exact amount that he's supposed to get.
The amount they're supposed to get. If you don't want to do it, Yerusha, I'll be mechayev them $30,000.
Yeah, because first of all, then it would be complicated, because then some might say, okay, I'll do it, and I'll take the money, and then he'll owe it, and then it's not as guaranteed. This way, I think it's a... Okay, now, we could talk about more details, but this is the basic... I'm sorry?
Opinion.
Yes.
Who's that done with?
He go with his rabbi, with whoever is helping him, you know, fill out this document. Okay, so the next time we'll just wrap some things up a little bit, and we'll talk more. Maybe I'll show you some neschos of this, and maybe we'll talk some of the detail. But this is the basic suggested method, and recommended method, and which many people do, of making sure that the chasim go wherever you want them to go. And this way, you just write a regular secular will, do it with a lawyer, everything, and you just have this little paper, which is a writer, and solves all the problems. Okay.